Hello, my friends. I have a terrible story for you out of Quebec. I don't want to give it away before you listen to it, but it's about a man who, because of the absolutely atrocious treatment he had in hospitals, he chose doctor-assisted suicide, and they gave it to him instead of the simple medical solution he needed. Just terrible story. We'll also talk to Sheila Gunn-Reid about the revelations at the Chinese Infiltration and Interference Commission. I'd really like it if you got the video version, because I want you to see Trudeau testifying before this commission. It's quite something to see. To get the video version of this podcast, go to rebelnewsplus.com, click subscribe, it's $8 a month. And in addition to getting the video content every day, you'll know you're supporting Rebel News Network, because we don't take a dollar from Trudeau, and it shows. All right, here's today's podcast. Tonight, do you notice that no one says anymore that Canada has the best healthcare system in the world? It's April 12th, and this is the Ezra Levant Show.
Shame on you, you censorious thug.
When I was growing up, and I think anyone over the age of 45 would know this, that everyone used to say Canada had the best healthcare system in the world. I remember people often said Medicare was our national identity. People were sometimes asked to say what being Canadian meant. And I remember from my youth, the two most common answers of the establishment left were, "We're not American," which I didn't think was particularly an identity. It's sort of an anti-identity, and it's not that true. But number two, and in fact, it was the most common answer, was our Medicare. I can't remember anyone saying that in at least 10 years, can you? Other than maybe public sector unions in a self-serving way, but I don't even think they say that anymore. In the last 4 years, COVID-19 has damaged so much trust in the system that I think it's pretty much polished off any love for our healthcare system. By the way, COVID-19 also purged a lot of excellent nurses and doctors and paramedics and others from the healthcare system. Certainly anyone with an independent mental spirit, the independence to be a contrarian, which sometimes you want. You want a second opinion in medicine quite often. And then add in 2.2 million immigrants last year to Canada. That's the figure that includes students, temporary workers, etc. No wonder our healthcare system is just the pits. Look at this heartbreaking story that I saw in the CBC today. So if this is how CBC reports it, you know it's even worse. Quadriplegic Quebec man chooses assisted dying after four-day emergency room stay leaves horrific bed sore. 4 days in the emergency room. Whole story is a crying shame, says Advocate. Let me read the first three sentences of this atrocious story. On a Thursday in January, Normand Monnier arrived at the hospital in Saint-Jérôme, Quebec, with a respiratory virus. Weeks later, he would emerge with a severe bed sore that would eventually lead him to seek medical assistance in dying MAID. Monnier, 66, had been a truck driver before a spinal cord injury in 2022 left his arms and legs paralyzed before being admitted to an intensive care bed for his third respiratory virus in 3 months this winter. Monnier was stuck on a stretcher in the emergency room for 4 days. Stuck on a stretcher for 4 days in the emergency room. Best healthcare system in the world, right? I'll keep reading. His partner, Sylvie Brosseau, says without having access to a special mattress, Monnier developed a major pressure sore on his buttocks that eventually worsened to the point where bone and muscle were exposed and visible, making his recovery and prognosis bleak. So sorry to read you that, but you need to hear it. 95 hours on a stretcher, unacceptable, Brosseau told Radio Canada in an interview. That's such an atrocious story in itself, but look at this. Keeps going. Every time we go to the hospital, it's my duty to tell them that Normand is quadriplegic, as if they couldn't detect that quickly, and needs an alternating pressure mattress. I don't understand how this can happen, because a mattress is the most basic thing, Brosseau says. Although she advocated for her partner, she was told the special bed had to be ordered. Okay, so he just needed a different kind of mattress, really. Shouldn't be a big deal. But of course it was a big deal. Speaking with Radio Canada the day before his death, Meunier said he preferred putting an end to his physical and psychological suffering by opting for a medically assisted death. So everyone knew what was going on. This didn't happen immediately. This happened over the course of months. Everyone knew this guy was in awful pain, and the solution was to get this mattress, but no one got it. They were all fine with him killing himself. In fact, they helped. That's what M-A-I-D means. I don't want to be a burden. At any rate, the medical opinions say I won't be a burden for long. As the old folks say, it's better to kick the can, said Meunier. He died at home on March 29th. Did he really die at home, or was he killed at his home? Let's be precise, please. Here's a disabilities advocate. I'm surprised they quoted one. That whole story is a crying shame, said Stephen Laperriere, the director general of the Regroupement des Activistes pour l'Inclusion au Québec, which supports people with disabilities. It's really a case of disbelief. What are we doing in order to help disabled persons or sick people to live in dignity prior to dying in dignity? He says the healthcare institution was negligent, to say the least, and that getting a proper mattress is not like trying to get a space shuttle into orbit. It's pretty basic. Nobody will convince me that within a few hours the proper mattress could not have been found, said Laperriere. Hey, crazy idea, just going on a limb here. Do you think by chance this is happening on purpose? As in by governments that would rather just kill someone than go to the hassle of getting a mattress on time or fixing emergency room waiting lines or spending thousands of dollars making a sick person healthy again. This is a war on the weak. It's a war on the sick. What a change from the fake moral superiority we normally hear from government-run healthcare advocates. Here's the obvious statement. Trudeau Lemons says this case is, quote, an illustration of problems in our healthcare system. The Scholl Chair in Health Law and Policy at the University of Toronto says people who are already vulnerable are left feeling like more of a burden in the system. Quote, then the system responds by saying, well, you can have access to medical assistance in dying, said Lemons. Medical assistance in dying is more easily available and on a more regular basis than some of the most basic care. He says he is increasingly hearing stories of people who are struggling in the system and turn to MAID. Oh, well, he was old. He was a truck driver, probably one of those horn-honking protesters. And he was a quadriplegic. He was nobody's nothing, as Morrissey would say. He wasn't cool and fashionable and avant-garde like this guy. Did you see this story? Ontario resident who wants both a vagina and penis wins public funding for unique surgery. A court has ruled that Ontario must pay for a penis-sparing vaginoplasty for a person who identifies as neither fully female nor fully male. I guess there are bosses now. I guess these three judges sort of rule the world now. Let me quote from the story. If this were April 1st, I swear I would think this is a prank. Ontario has been ordered to pay for surgery for a resident who is seeking to have a vagina constructed while leaving their penis intact. Denying the procedure would infringe on the person's charter-protected right to security of the person. Did you know that there's a charter right to have the government pay for both a penis and a vagina? Did you know that? Now you do. An Ontario court said in its ruling, the unanimous decision, it's so obvious, this decision, of course it's unanimous, by a three-member panel of judges of Ontario's Divisional Court, could expand access to a novel bottom surgery for people who identify as non-binary, meaning neither fully male nor fully female. So that's the great thing about government-run healthcare, isn't it? On the one hand, government can sentence uncool people like that truck driver to death just by starving them of resources, letting them stay on a stretcher for 95 hours. And the same government can muster extraordinary amounts of money, probably hundreds of thousands of dollars, for the most bizarre political experiments. And don't you dare criticize, you bigoted, transphobic racist. Things are getting worse every day, aren't they? Stay with us for more. I said earlier in the show today that when I was young, people always said Canada has the best healthcare in the world. It's central to our Canadian identity. That shows how old I am. Also, when I was young, Canada liked to punch above its weight in the world. We called ourselves honest brokers, whether it was Cyprus or Israel and Lebanon or whatever. Canada liked to play a diplomatic role, and we had lots of peacekeepers. I don't actually think there's a single Canadian peacekeeper anywhere around the world. And despite all the tough talk by Christian Freeland and Justin Trudeau, I think Canada has handed over one single tank to Ukraine, and I don't think it's been deployed yet. So many promises that we make we can't keep, and it shows. Canada was left out of major NATO exercises in Europe. We just didn't have the horses to participate. In the new AUKUS, that's Australia and the UK, That's a new alliance that we are completely left out of, Australia, United States, UK. We're simply not there anymore. We're just inconsequential. Justin Trudeau convinced himself that Canada was a power player. He was so certain that Canada would be elected to the non-permanent seat in the UN Security Council. He blew millions of dollars trying to bribe countries around the world to vote for him, and they simply didn't. And I say all this because what's been happening this week at the Judicial Commission of Inquiry into Foreign Interference in Our Elections is so shocking that if any of our so-called Five Eyes allies, that's sort of like the super friends of the democracy, the closest allies we have in the world, including the US and Australia and the UK, if any of our Five Eyes allies we're still taking Canada seriously, that would absolutely be extinguished after watching Justin Trudeau's cavalier and, I would say, childish approach to national security. Like a child, he needed to be read to, like a bedtime story from Daddy. He wouldn't read memos. He insisted on them being read to him like a child. Maybe he is illiterate. I remember as a candidate, he said he had dysnumeria or some semi-made-up problem where he said he couldn't do math. Remember this?
I am dysnumeric. What that means is I have an inability to handle small numbers and little calculations, those easy things that people do so well.
Yeah, I think that maybe he's functionally illiterate as well. I think we actually do have the dumbest leader in the world. When he said to one of the inquiries that found him guilty of violating the Conflict of Interest Act that he really left the details to other people and he was more into relationships and ceremony, maybe he was actually telling the truth. Joining us now via Skype is our friend Sheila Gunn-Reid, our chief reporter, who has been covering very closely the cascading waterfall of embarrassment that has been this commission. Sheila, great to see you again.
Thanks for having me on the show, boss. Yeah, this commission today was not supposed to be a commission sitting day, but they had to clear up some things that were brought before the commission well after a major witness testified. But I think we'll get to that in a second.
Well, I mean, I've been reading your coverage, and I've also, because you've been live tweeting it, and you've been clipping videos, and I very much encourage our viewers who are on Twitter to go to Sheila Gunn-Reid. That's your handle on Twitter, and it's just one bombshell after another. I've also been reading the Twitter feed of Steve Chase, who's a senior reporter at the Globe and Mail, and I know I criticize the Globe and Mail a lot, but I have always mentioned Steve Chase as a genuine reporter who gets his facts right, and who often presents challenges to the government. For example, he was part of the team, him and Bob Fyfe, who reported that Jody Wilson-Raybould was fired by Trudeau. Trudeau said that was false. No, Trudeau was just lying. Same sort of thing here. Steve Chase and Bob Fyfe reporting on Chinese government infiltration in Canada, Trudeau denying it. And so it's interesting to watch your coverage and the coverage of the mainstream media, at least in the case of Steve Chase. Everyone sees the emperor has no clothes. All right, enough preamble for me. Why don't you tell us some of the bombs that blew up today, metaphorically?
Sure. So the reason there was basically an unscheduled emergency sitting of the commission, which was supposed to wrap up on Wednesday with Justin Trudeau's testimony, is that in the middle of the night after the testimony of CSIS Director David Vigneault, documents relating to his testimony were given to the lawyers on the other side of the commission, the non-government lawyers, the intervening lawyers, in the middle of the night. So 1 o'clock in the morning, they raised this issue. They said, well, now we have these documents that say these wild things, and we need to be able to ask David Vigneault questions about it. And so we recalled David Vigneault, and a lot of those, the questions today are relating to a briefing note from February 2023 that was given directly to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, not the briefing note itself, but a briefing relating to this note and members of the PMO. And what that briefing note said, and it was from CSIS, it was a CSIS conclusion that said that China has been deceptively and clandestinely meddling in Canadian elections, specifically in the last two. And it said, we know, like we as an agency know this is happening. And so it's no wonder that the government didn't want those documents to be in the hands of the opposition lawyers when they were able to cross-examine David Vigneault. So Justin Trudeau was asked about those that briefing note, and he denied everything that was in the briefing note. And I think this is really interesting because PMO staffers had contemporaneous notes, their own handwritten notes, from the day that they were given that briefing note, but they denied hearing about two very specific issues inside that briefing note. One, that CSIS knew, and thus CSIS communicated directly to the PMO and to Justin Trudeau, that China had clandestinely meddled in the election, and that we are lagging behind our Five Eyes allies, and that Canada is a low-risk, high-reward target for the PRC.
The briefing notes prepared for the director didn't particularly align with the actual briefing we got.
Yes.
The briefing was spent almost entirely on specific cases, and all of these notes prepared for the director, generally saying, yes, foreign interference is serious, India, China, serious, would have taken up the first 30 seconds of what the director said, because
Understood.
He would have gotten right into the cases. So this is not...
I'm just going to show you one more point from this. I do have your point about that. It's page 3. Yes, thank you. It's the bullet point that begins with the word ultimately. Ultimately, state actors are able to conduct foreign interference successfully in Canada because there are no consequences, either legal or political. Foreign interference is therefore a low risk and high reward endeavor. Did the director convey in those words or in some similar words that message that this is a low risk, high reward endeavor because there are no consequences?
No.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
That's Trudeau saying,
yeah,
I'm too stupid to read my briefing notes, so I take them bedtime story style,
mm-hmm.
By having the director of CSIS read them to me like I'm an idiot child. And no, he didn't mention that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying documents were filed at 1 a.m. And they recalled the head of CSIS to contradict Trudeau. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what happened. So that is the briefing note from February 2023. CSIS director says those are the briefing notes, mm-hmm. of what would have been the briefing given to the Prime Minister's office. And as I said, they have contemporaneous handwritten notes relating to other things from that briefing, mm-hmm. that day. But they deny, Katie Telford herself denies that she was being told that. So the CSIS director was recalled this morning, and we've got a clip of him saying, actually, I did tell him.
Let's take a look.
Have you ever communicated this particular assessment about us being slower than our Five Eyes allies to either the Prime Minister or the Prime Minister's office?
Madam Commissioner, I can say with confidence that this is something that has been conveyed to the government, to ministers, the Prime Minister, using these words and other types of words, we often, in order to make sure we understand, have the best possible assessment of a situation, we often look to other jurisdictions to see what is their own analysis of the threat, what tools they have put in place. And so the comparative analysis of with the Five Eyes, but also with other like-minded nations who have similar political systems as ours, or Western democracies, doing the comparative analysis is a very useful tool, both from an intelligence point of view, but also from a policy point of view. So I can say with high degree of confidence that, you know, these examples, I've used them in both private briefings, but also in my public speeches, in CSIS annual reports, in parliamentary testimony. Just this past week, I was in testifying in front of the Canada-China Committee in the House of Commons, and I used same kind of analysis on different topics linked to foreign interference. So yes, to question to the council, this has been conveyed.
Thank you. And I take it your answer would be the same for the passage at page 3 about there being no consequences, legal or political, for state actors who conduct foreign interference. Have I got that right?
Yes, Madam Commissioner. I elaborated on that point with previous questions, answers, sorry. But yes, it is accurate to say that, you know, I have used these expressions. And indeed, this one very specifically, low risk, high reward endeavor.
Thank you.
So Trudeau says, no, I was never told that Canada's easy pickings. No one ever read me the bedtime story. Yep. I mean, sure, I was given the memo, but I don't read that. I mean, come on, guys, I don't read that. And no, my bedtime story reader is less trustworthy than me. Trust me, the laziest prime minister in history, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I don't read memos because reading's for squares and I'm the cool guy. Trust me and believe me when I say, no, I didn't see that part. Or was he willfully blind, of course, because he was the beneficiary? I mean, it's one thing for China to rob us blind of our industrial secrets or intellectual property. They destroyed a company called Novatel, you might remember. Excuse me, Nortel. And that just benefits China. But in this case, the benefits to China were also benefits to Trudeau, namely defeating conservative candidates in ridings with a high Chinese-Canadian population. So, of course, Trudeau conveniently forgot or hid or redacted any criticism of what China was doing because he was the beneficiary of it. He's literally the Manchurian candidate.
Yeah, and he used accusations of racism repeatedly to shut everybody up about it. He was calling Chinese Canadians racist against Chinese people when they were raising questions about what was going on in their own communities. And actually, that lawyer there, Gib Van Aert, he's been a real joy to watch, by the way. He is Michael Chong's lawyer, and he, in Justin Trudeau's testimony, forced him to admit that reasonable questions about foreign interference and what China was doing within Canadian democracy, he forced him to admit that a reasonable person would not call that racism. However, Justin Trudeau repeatedly did it himself multiple times.
You know, I think China is obviously the greatest rival to the democratic West. I know that some in the military-industrial complex think Russia is because they're, you know, getting to play with their weapons, and there's a hot war going on there, and it's a proxy war. Ukrainians are doing the dying, but the Pentagon is doing the planning and the strategizing, and the military-industrial complex is booming. I find that whole thing extremely tragic. But I do not think that Russia is the grave threat of the 21st century towards Canada. I think radical Islam is a threat, but the greatest persistent economic, military, cultural, geopolitical threat to the West is so obviously China. And Trudeau refuses to acknowledge that. He's on alert for Russian disinformation. They're on guard for the Russians. But in the meantime, he's accepting checks to the Trudeau Foundation from China. He's accepting bust-in voters from China, literally Chinese nationals getting on a bus and going to vote for his candidates. I think that Trudeau has disgraced himself, not just to the country, but if I were a leader of the Five Eyes, which if I recall, are Canada, the United States, UK, Australia, and I can't remember if the fifth is France or New Zealand. Forgive me, I can't remember which of the fifth eye and the Five Eyes are. But certainly if I was in UK, Australia, or US, and I saw this, I would say, part of me would say, oh, we're safe because Trudeau's so too stupid to read anything. So he's not going to leak our secrets. But I'd say, I can't trust Canada with this buffoon as the leader. He's turning a blind eye to Chinese infiltration. He's on the other side of this battle. He's against us. I just don't know how any of our allies could take Trudeau seriously.
He denies being briefed by the CSIS director, his bedtime story reader. He's not a librarian, by the way. This is the top spy agent in the country. He's not Justin Trudeau's drag queen story hour reader. Justin Trudeau flatly denies being briefed that China had clandestinely and deceptively, those are the words used, foreign interfered in the 2019 and 2021 elections.
There we are. Yes. Director, it's the bullet point. We know that the PRC clandestinely and deceptively interfered in both the 2019 and 2021 general elections. Is this knowledge something that you or the service as a body have communicated to the Prime Minister or the Prime Minister's office?
Madam Commissioner, it is indeed something that has been communicated. I believe that I testified to that in where I said in our assessment, we saw foreign interference in both the 2019 and 2021 elections. However, I concur with the result of the panel, the conclusion of the panel, that this interference did not amount to having the impact on the general election. So I think it's important to understand that both statements, in my opinion, are true at the same time. We saw foreign interference during those elections, and that interference was indeed clandestine and deceptive. And at the same time, that interference did not amount to have an impact on the integrity of the election.
And if I may just finally follow up on this one point, if you're able to say, Director, and I appreciate you may not be, are you able to say whether the interference referred to in this bullet is limited to Don Valley North in 2019 and Steveston or Richmond East in 2021, or whether it's broader?
I think, Madam Commissioner, the best way to answer the question is refer back to the summary that the government has published in public to the commission as made public regarding the specific information on the 11 candidates and 13 staff members.
Understood. Thank you, Commissioner.
Sheila, what's another video? I mean, I've been following your tweets, and the reason I mentioned Steve Chase is because I'm thinking, is this getting outside of the skeptical conservative media space? I mean, just like the mainstream media is in its own little world, sometimes we have our own echo chamber. Is this news getting to other people who aren't in our circle? And I think maybe it is. What do you think?
I think this is international news. Even just as I was preparing for this interview, I wanted to see what was being said about what I saw this morning in testimony. And it's in the BBC. It's in Reuters. This is international news that our prime minister was informed about foreign interference, despite the fact that he says that he wasn't. And he is directly attempting, I think, to undermine our CSIS director, who says that he personally informed Justin Trudeau orally, because that's how he takes his briefings. It's really an astounding thing. He is attempting to throw our security apparatus under the bus, because that's the only way out of this, is that it's not us accepting foreign interference. It's them not telling us about it.
You know, forgive me this digression, but you made me think of the scene in The Office, you know, that comedy, where someone is explaining something to Michael. And Michael says, explain it to me like I'm five. So the guy explains it to him and says, and then the next year. And so Michael says, so now I'm six. Here, take a look at this clip.
We have a surplus of $4,300.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We have to spend that by the end of the day or it will be deducted from next year's budget.
Why don't you explain this to me like I'm five?
Your mommy and daddy give you $10 to open up a lemonade stand. So you go out and you buy cups and you buy lemons and you buy sugar. And now you find out that it only costs you $9.
Ho!
So you have an extra dollar.
Yeah.
So you can give that dollar back to mommy and daddy. But guess what? Next summer,
I'll be six.
And you ask them for money, they're going to give you $9. Because that's what they think it costs to run the stand. So what you want to do is spend that dollar on something now, so that your parents think that it costs $10 to run the lemonade stand.
So the dollar's a surplus. This is a surplus.
We have to spend that $4,300 by the end of the day, or it'll be deducted from next year's budget.
Woo.
We should spend this money on a new copier, which we desperately need.
Okay, break it down in terms of, I think I'm getting you.
That's Justin Trudeau. He wants to be so very serious. He wants to be a player. He wants to be a decider. He wants to be more than just a mascot. He wants to be the prime minister. But he's like a child. And I think it's sort of crazy how he's embraced that. Like, he's not pretending that he's read it. He's trying to make that into a virtue. No,
That's his defense.
Yeah. But in a way, he's telling us exactly who he is. It reminds me of when that conflict of interest commissioner asked Trudeau, why were you taking $100,000, $200,000 free vacation from the Aga Khan? And he said, well, because I don't really get into any details. If they were trying to bribe me, I wouldn't even know what they're talking about. I'm too stupid. Other people handle the details. I'm just into the relationships. He was serious when he said, I don't think about monetary policy. He was serious when he says he leaves the tough stuff to other people. He is serious. He is like a 5 or 6 year old child. And it's incredible that, I mean, yes, Steve Chase is writing up a storm about this, but if this were a conservative prime minister, or if this were Donald Trump, or if this were, like, there would be immediate and widespread calls for his resignation, or if we were in such a system, an impeachment. This is deeply embarrassing that is the head of our government.
It's akin to what the Democrats accused Donald Trump of with Russia, 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 but there was nothing there. Now we know there's literally something there. The CSIS director is saying there's something there. Justin Trudeau is throwing the CSIS director under the bus while simultaneously throwing himself under the bus because his defense is, I'm too stupid, so trust me. Yeah. It's wild.
You know, by the way, the Canadian media was absolutely obsessed with Donald Trump's impeachment and the Mueller inquiry into Russian collusion. I mean, the CBC for about 4 years probably covered Donald Trump more than they covered Canadian politics. They were obsessed with it, and especially this allegation of collusion, which, by the way, the Mueller inquiry found did not happen. Here you have, in our own country, Chinese interference that actually made a difference. The warning bells were silenced by Trudeau for his own benefit. And the CBC is, oh, well, yeah. I mean, it's just, they're not completely ignoring the story, but I tell you, it would be a five-alarm fire if it were any other party. If it were Russian collusion with the conservatives, it would be all they talked about. This is incredible.
You know, at the very beginning of this commission, they brought up how maybe potentially Russia had fomented some anti-vaccine stuff that maybe the People's Party of Canada had benefited from, but there was no evidence to any of that. We have CSIS saying China has deceptively and clandestinely meddled in the last two elections to the benefit of the Liberals, transferred $250,000 to campaign operatives up to the campaign. There's another little sinister part in all of this too. CSIS in their documents said that it's not just that the targeted individuals, these Conservative Party candidates and Jenny Kwan as well from the NDP, are being targeted out of the consulate, surveilled out of the consulate, and shut out of Chinese language media. They also said that there are co-opted members of the campaign, of their campaigns, have been infiltrated by the Chinese government to undermine them. They use the word co-opted staff in the targeted individuals' offices.
Unbelievable. Hey, throw to one last video clip and then we'll let you go.
Okay, let's go to, sorry, Olivia, Ezra just put me on the spot. Okay, let's go to Justin Trudeau saying that despite all the things that he heard about Han Dong and the busing in of foreign nationals into his, foreign national high school students who went to a school outside of his riding, but miraculously all lived inside of the riding, and they turned up on a bus on nomination day and nobody knows who paid for the bus and none of that, Justin Trudeau says, rises to the level where he would have reconsidered Han Dong's contaminated nomination.
Mr. Broadhurst met me at the airport in a holding room, in a lounge on the government side of the airport, government terminal in the airport, to let me know of concerns that he had received from the site task force and CSIS about the nomination campaign, the nomination election, the nomination race contest in Don Valley North. He shared with me that the intelligence services had shared with him concerns that Chinese officials in Canada had been developing plans to possibly engage in interference in the nomination contest, specifically by mobilizing buses filled with, and the challenge in this is always trying to pick out what I heard exactly then from what I knew later, but I believe it was either buses full of students or buses filled with Chinese speakers or Chinese diaspora members who would be mobilized to support Han Dong, who would have been mobilized to support Han Dong in that nomination contest of a few weeks previous. I asked the extent to which they were certain that it happened, the extent to which they were certain that China was indeed behind the mobilizing of the bus or buses. And I also asked whether or not CSIS had information that Han Dong knew about this, whether he was witting and aware that China had mobilized or Chinese officials had mobilized buses for him or not. And the answers were not clear from CSIS at that point. This was secret information that we could not share with the candidate in question, Mr. Dong, or the public at large, in terms of what they were telling us about these concerns and these allegations. Acting would be removing Han Dong as our official candidate. The other choice would be not to remove that candidate. But understanding that the decision to remove someone needed a high threshold, a threshold that, incidentally, I have met and seen many other cases. As Liberal Party leader, I have on many, many different occasions, have to ask people to step down or step away or desist as candidates for the Liberal Party. As most recently, as the last election, where we did that in the case of a downtown Toronto riding. But in this case, I didn't feel that there was sufficient or sufficiently credible information that would justify this very significant step as to remove a candidate in these circumstances.
He, Justin Trudeau, is the Chinese asset. I was just thinking, he disqualifies candidates all the time. He interferes with nomination races all the time. He puts his handpicked team in all the time for trivial reasons, for personal reasons, for ideological reasons, for anti-democratic reasons.
I was just going to say, Ezra, if Han Dong had been pro-life, he would have removed him. Yeah. But being contaminated by Chinese money is fine.
Yeah, and to think that an emergency CSIS briefing to the head of the Liberal campaign, oh no, that didn't rise to the level. I need it to be a very high level. I disqualify anyone for personal, for any reason or no reason, but CSIS, no. And it's because Trudeau wanted Han Dong, because he wanted to win with the Chinese government's help. And he wanted to win. His interests were absolutely in synchronicity with China's interests. If this were Russia propping up an anti-Ukraine candidate in the Conservative or People's Party, he would have rung the alarm, had a press conference, called in the police, raided. Police would have raided things with guns drawn. No, no. This was to help Trudeau. So, of course, it didn't rise. I'm famous for my judgment in national security matters. Everyone knows I read my memos. No, what a joke. He has them read to him like bedtime stories. This guy's a crook. Justin Trudeau is a crook on the same level that Richard Nixon was a crook. Richard Nixon never sold out his country to a foreign interest. Richard Nixon may have known about the Watergate break-in, and that was a crime. But it wasn't the crime of treachery, of selling out your own country to a foreign country. Just unbelievable. I look forward to seeing how the mainstream media covers this in the days ahead. Sheila, thanks for doing such a great job live tweeting it and clipping those videos in real time, too. I really recommend people follow your Twitter feed.
Thanks, boss. It was a big job, but we have to tell the other side of the story. We know the mainstream media journalists are watching the same feed that I was and reporting something entirely different sometimes.
Yeah. All right. There you have it. Sheila Gunn-Reid, our chief reporter. I'm here in Toronto this week. I was in other cities too, including in Calgary, where I went to the Stop the Carbon Tax protest on the highway west of the city. And I was delighted that today was another day of the Strong and Free Conference, a conservative convention in Ottawa. I wasn't there myself. I think I've been doing a little too much traveling. But our Alexa Lavoie was there, got some great interviews. I encourage you to see her reports. And you know what I felt good about? Although there were lots of lobbyists there, too, in the end, I felt good that there was actually some true conservative ideology, that they were actually talking about conservative ideas, that they were standing up to the carbon tax. You know, I remember when it felt inevitable that the carbon tax would win and that side would win. You know, one of the guest speakers at that conference was Tony Abbott, the former Australian prime minister who rescinded their carbon tax. It can be done. And I don't know if you saw the headline, but it's shocking, truly. Jagmeet Singh says, well, maybe he's against the carbon tax now, too. He realizes what a loser it is, how most Canadians are against it. Even other parties, like other premiers, are turning against it. And it goes to show that when losers like Erin O'Toole and Andrew Scheer bend the knee on the carbon tax or all the compromising they do to win over the center. They don't win over the center. They just move the center further to the left. And they keep on losing and losing. But for the first time, the Conservatives had a truly conservative leader in a decade. The party's doing well. Now, it's also because Justin Trudeau is doing so poorly. But still, you can only imagine if Erin O'Toole was the candidate for the Conservatives now, he would be a pro-carbon tax, pro-vaccine, pro-big government, pro-censorship candidate. Super gross. So I feel good about the way things are going. That's the show for today. Until next time, on behalf of all of us here at Rebel World Headquarters, to you at home, good night, and keep fighting for freedom.